ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 3, Text 20. Are you right? Text 20, correct? Vyavasayena, vyavasayena te nena, duskarena manashvinam, taponishtena bhavata, jitoham ditinandana, vyavasayena tenena, duskarena manasvinam, taponishtena bhavata, jitoham ditinandana, vyavasayena tenena, duskarena manasvinam, taponishtena bhavata, jitoham ditinandana. Ladies. Vyavasayena, by determination. Te, your. Anena, this. Dushkarena, difficult to perform. Manasvinam, even for great sages and saintly persons. Tapanishtena, aimed at executing austerity. Bhavata, by you. Jitaha, conquered. Aham, I. Diti Nandana, O son of Diti. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. My dear son of Diti, with your great determination and austerity, you have done what was impossible even for great saintly persons, and thus I have certainly been conquered by you. Purport. In regard to the word Jitaha, Srila Madhva Muni gives the following quotation from the Skandant Nirnaya. Padabhutam vasashtam cha jitabid uchate buddhai. If one comes under someone else's control or is defeated by another, he is called jita. Hiranyakasipu's austerity was so great and wonderful that even Lord Brahma agreed to be conquered by him. So, first thing that sort of came to my mind when I was reading this translation of Prabhupada, because I haven't been around for the classes leading up to this over the last week or two. Why is Lord Brahma prepared to cooperate with Hiranyakasipu? What's going on here? And it says here that you have done what was impossible even for great saintly persons, and thus I have certainly been conquered by you. And but certainly, you know, Lord Brahma is the most powerful demigod in the universe. And so how is it that he's prepared to cooperate with Hiranyakasipu? Well, actually, when I started at the beginning of the chapter and kind of tried to catch up reading up to this, is apparently the demigods actually were being very disturbed by the these austerities that were being performed by Hiranyakasipu. So they approached Lord Brahma to do something about it. Right? So that was part of the reason. And that was the main reason why Lord Brahma is here right now, trying to, you know, to try to do something to pacify Hiranyakasipu. And also another point is that Hiranyakasipu, up to this point, he was following the process. You know, and he was performing tapasya according to, you know, he hadn't really done anything wrong yet, so to speak. It's kind of just like even modern day society. Lord Brahma, you know, you might realize somebody's not correctly motivated, but if they haven't done anything, you know, particularly in a criminal yet, you can't. You know, there's nothing you can't persecute them, or you can't go after them. So Hiranyakasipu is kind of in that position that he, that all the demigods and could understand that, you know, what his motivation was, but up till that point he hadn't really done anything that was, particularly offensive or criminal. So they had to kind of go along with it. And Lord Brahma, trying to, you know, cooperate with the demigods, and at the same time, because Hiranyakasipu was, you know, doing, he didn't try to, you know, he performed these austerities to get these powers, these benedictions. So, okay, so Lord Brahma is saying, okay, well, you know, we'll give him some benedictions, and maybe that'll, he'll be pacified. So something, you know, along those lines. So he, you know, in this way we can understand how it's possible that, you know, somebody who's a great demon like Hiranyakasipu could get the cooperation of Lord Brahma. Then another thing was, how is it that Hiranyakasipu, he's, so his motivation is way off, you know, as we can understand from different statements Prabhupada made. And this was something I was, I found a couple things Prabhupada said in one purport here. How, and this is the material world. Everyone is trying to become master through various devices. And another thing Prabhupada said was, thus, self-interested persons by demoniac austerity want to kill even their benedictors, whereas Vaishnavas want to remain existing as servant, ever existing as servant. So Hiranyakasipu is, It's kind of like a, you know, a very funny situation, because he understood, to some extent, he understood that Vishnu was the Supreme Lord. And, you know, I think it's some of the earlier chapters, he's mentioned, he was very, he was expressing his disturbance that, you know, that Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, killed his brother Hiranyaksha, siding with the demigods. So he had some understanding of who he was up against. You know? Of course, at this point, really, he's, I don't know if it's, his ambition is, it's kind of, I'm sure he would, ideally, he would like revenge, but at this point, basically, he's just trying to become the absolute ruler of the entire universe. Although that's probably, after he accomplished that, that's probably a later part of his agenda, to try to, you know, retaliate, get revenge against Vishnu. But, so it's interesting, because his, you know, motivation was so far off, then there's a relationship between that and the kind of intelligence, you know, a person gets. It's kind of, Krishna's, in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. But, of course, the converse of that is, or the inverse of that is true, too. To those who are not at all devoted to Krishna, and, you know, don't at all worship him with love, quite the opposite. And Krishna gives him the intelligence, a different type of intelligence. So that's what's happening here to Hiranyakasipu. He's just bewildered. On one level he knows that Vishnu is the Supreme Lord, but at the same time he's thinking that he can retaliate against him, you know, get revenge because of him killing his brother Hiranyaksha. And to this end, he's trying to take shelter of Lord Brahma. And as knowledgeable as he is, you know, because in the previous chapter he was giving instruction to trying to pacify his relatives, you know, upon the death of his brother Hiranyaksha. And we could see that, you know, from the way he spoke, he was quite a Vedic scholar. You know, he had a lot of knowledge. And but somehow or another, he didn't understand the relative, you know, the positions of Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu, ultimately Krishna. So he's taking shelter of Lord Brahma here, not understanding that Lord Brahma is only a very, I mean, relatively speaking, an insignificant servant of Lord Krishna. I mean, powerful, he's the most powerful person in this universe, but, in the greater scheme of things, Lord Brahma is not very big and powerful or significant. There's that nice pastime or story where Krishna invited Lord Brahma to visit Dwarka, and Lord Brahma goes there to Dwarka, and when he's at the residence of Lord Krishna, he's at the residence of Lord Krishna. Oh yeah, and the doorman, you know, the servant at the door announces to Krishna, okay, Lord Brahma's here. And Lord Brahma, and Krishna's response was, oh, which Lord Brahma? And Lord Brahma overheard that. And so when he went in to see Krishna, when he had his, you know, audience with Krishna, he, at one point he inquired, what did you mean by which Lord Brahma? He said, are there any other Lord Brahmas? And Krishna said, yeah, actually there's a lot of other Lord Brahmas. He said, you're actually one of only millions of, there's a Lord Brahma in each universe, and there's millions of universes. And, you know, you're just one of them. Actually, you're the youngest and the smallest. So anyway, and Krishna actually made all the other Lord Brahmas appear there simultaneously. And our Lord Brahma was able to, at that point, realize, wow, I'm just insignificant. You know, I mean, there's so many here that hear the millions of Lord Brahmas, and they're all servants of Krishna. So Hiranyakasipu is, taking shelter of a personality that's vastly inferior to the personality he's would like to get revenge against or retaliate against. So that's, you know, and as I said, he's bewildered in his intelligence, because on one level, as I said, he had some understanding that Vishnu is the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada gives this example of, just in general, of like taking shelter of demigods. He gives the example of, it's like trying to cross over the ocean by catching hold of a dog's tail. You know, a dog may be able to swim a little bit, but he's not a strong enough swimmer to cross the ocean himself. What to speak of if you catch hold of a dog's tail, You know, the dog himself can't get across the ocean. How are you going to get across the ocean by catching a hold of his tail? So, you know, something like that. He was taking, in his illusion, he was taking shelter of a personality that, you know, would not be able to ultimately help him achieve his objective. And as I said, that had a lot to do with his, you know, motivation, that he was, you know, he wasn't performing these austerities for any good purpose. He was just performing these austerities so that he could usurp the position of the very personalities who are trying to offer him these benedictions. Like what I said here, self-interested persons by demoniac austerity, this is exactly what he was up to, want to kill even their benedictors. And Prabhupada tells one nice story in this regard. Everybody's, probably most of you are familiar with it, about the, it's called, he's entitled Puna Musika Baba, you know, about how there was a mouse he started off with, and he was being harassed by a cat. So he approached this sage and asked for the benediction. I'm being harassed by this mouse. Can you help me? He said, well, yeah, sure. What do you want? He said, I want to be a cat. So he said, okay, be a cat. Made him a cat. And then he was a cat, and then he was being harassed by a dog. And so he approached the sage again, and he asked for a benediction. He said, he asked for help. I'm being harassed by the dog. Can you help me? And the sage said, okay, well, what do you want? He said, well, I want to be a dog. And he said, okay, become a dog. And he turned him into a dog. And then as a dog, he was being harassed by a tiger. So he approached the sage again and said, I'm being harassed by a tiger now. Can you help me? He said, yeah, okay, what do you want? I want to become a tiger. He said, okay. He turned him into a tiger. And then when he became a tiger, then he just was sitting there, and he was looking at the sage, and he was kind of looking at him and licking his lips, and, you know, became his intentions were obvious to the sage. And so the sage said, okay, what do you want now? He said, well, I want to eat you. And then the sage said, Puna Musika Baba. It means, again, become a mouse. So that's what happens, and that's what's going to happen to Hiranyakasipu. Of course, Hiranyakasipu is not going to get that far. He's not going to be able to, actually, he's not going to last long enough. He's not going to be around long enough to try to, as it says here, kill even his benedictor, Lord Brahma, because he made another mistake before he even had a chance to make that mistake, which was his, ultimately led to his ultimate downfall and demise, which was that he became offensive to his son, Prahlad, who was, you know, innocent, completely innocent. It's described, I think, later in this chapter that Prahlad was, you know, he was well-behaved. He was respectful to Hiranyakasipu. He was a good boy, you know. But he had one flaw as far as Hiranyakasipu was concerned, which was that he was a pure devotee of Krishna. And this was intolerable to his father, Hiranyakasipu, who considered Vishnu his enemy. So because of this, Hiranyakasipu persecuted him. He tried to kill him in various ways. He tried to have him bit by poisonous serpents and put him under the... there's so many different... Actually, it says in one, I think, either translation or Prabhupada, he made thousands of different attempts to kill Prahlad, none of which was successful, of course. And Prahlad was not only... He was undisturbed throughout the whole thing. You know, he was such a great devotee that throughout the whole thing, he was just meditating, you know, on Krishna, fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and he wasn't even perturbed by what was going on. It didn't have any... All his efforts didn't have any, you know, the desired effect upon Prahlad, but it actually kind of backfired on him. Because he was doing, you know, persecuting Prahlad like that, he was a pure devotee, that was... Well, that was actually the cause of his downfall. And there's a very nice verse here, which Surabhu has quoted many times over the years here in classes, but I don't know it by memory, so I'll just read it, about what happens to people who become inimical to devotees, Vaishnavas. Let's see if I can find it real quick here. Oh, yeah. So it's Yadu Diveshu Vedeshu, Goshu Vipreshu Sadushu, Dharme Mai Cha Vidvesha, Sava Asu Vinashyati. When one is envious of the demigods who represent the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of the Vedas, which give all knowledge, of the cows, the Brahmins, and Vaishnavas, and religious principles, and ultimately of me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he and his civilization will be vanquished without delay. Well, that's that translation. But more specifically, in the next, in the translation of the next verse, it says, when Hiranyakasipu teases, this is actually Krishna speaking, he says, when Hiranyakasipu teases the great devotee Pallad, his own son, who is peaceful and sober and who has no enemy, I shall kill Hiranyakasipu immediately, despite the benedictions of Brahma. So that's a significant point, that, and Prabhupada explains in the purport that it's such a serious thing to be envious or commit offenses to a Vaishnava, that even if one has received benedictions, which in this case Hiranyakasipu had, he received benedictions from Lord Brahma, so those benedictions were superseded by the gravity of that offense. And this is such a great offense, you know, to such a great mistake to offend a Vaishnav, you know, commit this Vaishnav aparad, that he just counteracted all the, you know, the benefit he was supposed to receive from the words of Lord Brahma. And it's explained here in the purport. Let's see if I can find it quickly. Hiranyakasipu was certainly enjoying the fruitful results of his austerities, but here the Lord says that as soon as he committed an offense at the lotus feet of Pallad Maharaj, he would be ruined. One's longevity, opulence, beauty, education, and whatever else one may possess as a result of pious activities cannot protect one if one commits an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnav. Despite whatever one possesses, if one offends the lotus feet of a Vaishnav, he will be vanquished. So that's the reason why he was vanquished, because he did that. And that was, once again, that was the cause of his downfall. So we can learn a number of interesting lessons from Hiranyakasipu. Is one that kind of always, you know, jumped out in my mind when I was preparing for the class, reading this, is that he was hoping to be, he wanted to be, as I mentioned before, the absolute ruler of the entire universe, and thinking he'd be happy in that way. But, you know, it's an illusion. I mean, in so many ways, he was like, you know, he had incredible prowess, but so many of his basic premises were flawed. And this was one of them, that, you know, he thought that he could become happy by being the, you know, the greatest, the most powerful personality. But in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, there's a very nice verse that goes, excuse me, Avritam Gainam Etena, Gyanino Nichavirana, Kamarupena Kuntaya, Duspadena Nalencha. Thus a man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. So he was the victim of material ambition. That's just another form of lust. You know, lust takes, lust, I mean, generally we hear the word lust, we think in terms of, you know, lust for the opposite sex or the same sex as the case may be, whatever. But, there's, you know, another form of lust is material ambition. That was the kind of lust that he was being afflicted by. So he was thinking, if I can fulfill this material ambition to be the absolute ruler of the entire universe, then I'll become happy, you know. But according to the Bhagavad Gita, no, it doesn't work like that. The result of that is that avritam gyanam etena, your real knowledge becomes covered over, you know, which is certainly what happened in the case of Hiranyakasipu. And you never become satisfied. Duspadena nalenacha. It's like fire. The more fuel you supply to the fire, the just more powerfully it burns. So in the same way, it's a flawed process. Hiranyakasipu is, you know, for all his, you know, Vedic knowledge and all his ability to perform incredible austerities, he just was bewildered, and he sized things up incorrectly. So anyway, so we can learn a good lesson, as I said, from Hiranyakasipu, because here's somebody who is so powerful, you know, that at one point he was being served by all the different, I think it's mentioned, he was served by all the different demigods, except for Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma. Everybody else was, you know, scared of him, basically, and they were serving him, including even Narada Muni. Well, certainly not with any sincerity, but, you know, he had a tremendous amount of power and control, but not happy. Not happy, not satisfied. At least Prabhupada says in one lecture, at least he wasn't happy that his son Pallad had become a devotee of Vishnu. So he wasn't happy. And So we could see that's not the process. You know? And we have so many examples of... So, of course, none of us are planning on becoming like Hiranyakasipu, but the idea is that, just in our own lives, we can take the lesson that, happiness doesn't come from necessarily, having like a bigger, a better social position, more power, more influence, more like authority like that. No, there's so many examples of within our society of devotees who are just very humble devotees and who very, very sincerely try to cultivate their Krishna consciousness. And, we can see they're very happy. And ultimately what happens is somebody just is very sincere about following the process, then Krishna makes an arrangement by which at some point they become recognized by other devotees. They don't have to, like Hiranyakasipu is kind of, trying to, by the dint of his own prowess, his own strength, is trying to, climb, get up there. But devotees aren't interested in that because they know that won't make them happy anyway. And it happens, and the irony of the whole situation is that if somebody's a very sincere devotee, Krishna makes an arrangement by which they come into some position of influence by which, they're able to not kind of control or rule over other people for their own sense gratification, but they're in a position where they're able to inspire other devotees in their devotional service. So, in other words, we don't have to, it's not a way to become happy. And we could see, here's one of the most successful people in the history of the material world, and he was not happy. Quite the contrary, he was a miserable guy. So why should we try to, follow that process? No. On the other hand, we have, as I say, examples of devotees who just about totally diametrically opposite that, just very humbly stay in, their position, whatever that may be, and just cultivate their devotional service, and they're very happy. And ultimately, they become very prominent individuals anyway. And another sort of point is, Hiranyakasipu met his end here because of his offenses against Prahlad Maharaj. And Prabhupada points out in one purport that, although Hiranyakasipu was taken out of the picture long ago, his modern-day representatives are wreaking havoc, on the face of the earth today. As a matter of fact, they're actually in control. This is an excerpt from a purport. So I think it's coming up next chapter. Prabhupada says, at the present, especially on this planet, the influence of Lord Brahma has decreased considerably, and the representatives of Hiranyakasipu, the Rakshasas and the demons, have taken charge. There is no protection of Brahminical culture and cows, which is the basic prerequisite for all good fortune. This age is very dangerous because society is being managed by demons and rakshasas, as Prabhupada said, he referred to as the representatives of Hiranyakasipu. This is the present situation. I was glad to find that paragraph today because I knew of something, an instruction similar to this, which I read in the Rajavijja, the king of knowledge, Prabhupada said, this material world is being managed by Rakshasas, man-eating demons who will crush their own sons for the satisfactions of their senses. But that book is a transcription of a lecture Prabhupada gave in 1966 in New York, but this further confirms that same point that, it's true. This is what's going on in the face of the earth today, that, the society is being managed by demons and Rakshasas. So, I think our response to that has to be kind of twofold. Knowing that, understanding that, we have to be very careful in our own lives not to be influenced, by this demoniac and rakshasic culture that's out there. Prabhupada says engaging in devotional service is like declaring war against the illusory energy. So that war takes place on, probably many levels, but at least two levels that I'm aware of is one, our own personal selves. We have to, it's like engaging in devotional service is declaring war against that, that illusory mentality, that we can be the enjoyer, because it's sort of all pervasive out there. And the other level is that, well, you know, once we're sort of established in our identity as servants of Krishna, then, you know, it's incumbent upon us to try to do something to try to counteract that trend that's going on out there, as small a socially insignificant a, you know, a body as we may be. We have to try to do something to stem the tide, so to speak. And that might seem like an insurmountable, or how would you say, not insurmountable, but an unachievable sort of goal, because there's so few of us, and you know, there's so many demons and rakshasas out there, and or people who are being influenced by them. But if we're very sincere devotees and really try to very sincerely follow the instructions of our spiritual masters and predecessor acharyas, then by their mercy, you know, we'll be able to do something. And I think Srila Prabhupada was like the greatest example of that. You know, Prabhupada, it wasn't like Prabhupada came over from India with like a tremendous amount of resources. He didn't have any resources. You know, he came over with no resources, basically. He came over as an old person who had two heart attacks on his trip coming over, and virtually really no money. He had, I think he came over with 47 rupees, something, 40-something rupees, which he wasn't even able to exchange into dollars when he got here. And so he was coming from, and he's coming from a country which was not like looked up to as an important, prestigious, powerful country, India. You know, everybody's idea of India was this, you know, very much a third world country, a beggar country, you know, begging technology and whatever. So Prabhupada came with no resources, basically. No material resources. He came with, his resource was his complete faith in, the words of his spiritual master and the scriptures. There's that verse, Yasya Deve Para Bhaktir Tata Deve Tata Guru Tashaite Katita Kiyotak Prakashante Mahamana. That unto those who have implicit faith in the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master, and the words of the spiritual master and the words of the Supreme Lord, all the imports of the Vedas are automatically revealed. So that was certainly, Prabhupada certainly fits that description. And that was his qualification. That was his resource, that he had that faith, and he acted upon that. And as a result of that, Krishna reciprocated. You know, Krishna reciprocated with Prabhupada's sincere, determined effort to execute the instruction of the spiritual master, and he awarded him with a Krishna consciousness movement. There's one purport in the fourth canto someplace where Prabhupada, I'm sure he wasn't speaking about himself, but it did apply. He says that the pure devotee is always thinking about how to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. And Krishna, being pleased by that attitude and attempt, he enlightens the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. So that's, you know, how it happens. Prabhupada was so sincere and determined to try to execute the instruction of a spiritual master, spreading Krishna consciousness here in America, that Krishna, just in reciprocating with Prabhupada's sincerity, he enlightened the general populace from within. And some of us have, you know, come forward to try to become devotees. And there's also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's in that exchange between pastime with Vasudev Dat, you know, where Lord Chaitanya is glorifying Vasudev Dat, and then Vasudev Dat expresses how he's very disturbed by the fact that so many conditioned souls are suffering in the material world, and he requests Lord Chaitanya if he'd like to take all the reactions to their sinful activities himself and suffer the reactions to other people's sinful activities, so they could become, you know, purified, liberated, and go back to Godhead. And Lord Chaitanya explained to him that, you know, that wasn't necessary, because he was a great devotee, and he was, he was desiring their deliverance then, because, you know, that Krishna would, because of his desire that they become devotees, and Krishna would allow them to become devotees. And the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he, aham tvam sarva papa bhyo mokshasyami masucha, that he frees his devotees from reactions to sinful activities. But then he makes the point that it's Krishna's Lord Chaitanya explained this to Vasudev Dutt and the assembled devotees, that Krishna's only duty is to fulfill the desire of his pure devotees. That was the really point I wanted to make. So that's, you know, kind of another, and perhaps even a more important and clearer, precise understanding of how it is that Krishna consciousness movement spreads. It's, you know, Krishna fulfilling the desires of his pure devotee. So Prabhupada was a pure devotee, and because he desired to, you know, see a Krishna consciousness movement, then Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna fulfilled his desire. And I think that's my understanding of how this Krishna consciousness movement even exists. It's a manifestation of Lord Chaitanya and Krishna fulfilling Prabhupada's desire to do something for his spiritual master, to, you know, follow the instruction of his spiritual master. And in the same way, if we try to become very sincere followers of Srila Prabhupada or our spiritual masters, then same sort of thing could happen. So that's that's the hope. You know, that's what, you know, we have to always keep that in mind, that that's, because, you know, we were doing so many practical things in terms of, like, you know, maybe distributing books or this, and we have so many practical activities performed, but we have to, I think, try to keep this philosophical point in mind that, you know, it's not really, the activities we're performing in and of themselves aren't what's going to, you know, make the big change, you know, but it's Krishna who's in control. Krishna's in everyone's heart. And the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita says, for me, I'm in everyone's heart, and I'm supplying knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So ultimately, it's not going to be like our distributing 1,000 books or 1,000,000 books or 1,000,000,000 books that, you know, that's going to turn the world to become more Krishna conscious. It's going to be Krishna within people's hearts, being pleased with the sincere efforts of his devotees to, you know, follow the process, be devotees themselves, and spread Krishna consciousness. Krishna's going to, at the point when Krishna becomes really satisfied with our efforts to do that, then he will, as mentioned, enlighten the general populace from within by his causeless mercy, and people will become, all of a sudden, they'll just realize, wait a second, this is really interesting. This makes a lot of sense. And you know, they'll come forward, and they'll also want to become devotees. And we're already actually experiencing that happening at least to a small degree. A couple of weeks ago, I was at a music festival in Tennessee, and I've been going to that music festival now. It's probably about the 10th year in a row I've gone to that, and I was really I was impressed. There were so many people I was meeting who were telling me, "Oh yeah, I've got those books." Which was interesting. And then further, they said, I'm reading those books. So I've read that book. And then, which is good. And then even beyond that, they would say, I like that book. You know, I had people tell me, I said, because I'd ask them, what do you think of the book? And they'd say, well, I like what I read. It was interesting. And then there was even people saying, yeah, I really like you guys. And I had a few people come up and give me a big hug. You know, it's kind of, you know, this, it's not like what we're doing is to no avail. We're having, you know, some effect. It's having some impact. It's not, you know, maybe it's not like a night, you know, all or none type of situation. We just have to keep plugging away, and we're making inroads. There are people out there who are appreciating, you know, our books and our devotees being out there. I mean, all the distributors, if you ask them, will tell you the same thing. On a regular daily basis, we get, you know, people, I don't know, couldn't put a number on it, a dozen, saying to us, hey, thank you guys for being out here, you know, and meaning it. So it's having, you know, some effect is there. Something's going on, and we just have to persevere along the same lines as we're working on now, and hopefully we'll see some really nice developments in the future. Okay, I'll stop there. Anybody have any question or comment? Yeah, my comment.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class. Just one comment. You mentioned in the beginning that Hiranyakashipu hadn't done anything to this point, which is correct. to a certain point, he did instruct his demon buddies to go down and disrupt all the sacrificial performances and burn the hermitages and the forests and the pasturing grounds and disrupt all of society and destroy the Brahminical culture. In addition to that, he did make a vow that he would kill Vishnu.
Yeah, you're right. So that makes it even all the more amazing that Lord Brahma would be prepared to cooperate with his, you know.
Yeah. Prabhupada also does explain later on that because these worshipable demigods are engaged in business. It's a business. You know, those who worship the demigods, they're engaged in business. So the demigods are obliged to come down when someone worships them. They're obliged by their position to fulfill certain demands, unfortunately. But that Srila Prabhupada also explains that's a reason that the demigods have to reciprocate, because the worshippers are engaged in certain austerities.
Yeah, which is along the lines of what I was saying.
So it's a business deal.
The process.
Yeah.
So Lord Brahma was kind of obliged to. Yeah, thank you. Anybody else? Anything? Amala Bhakti Prabhu.
Just a very brief point, Prabhu. And that is, you had mentioned that Srila Prabhupada has this intense desire, of course, to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, in pursuance of his order of his spiritual master. And yes, and also, and you said that Krishna was helping to fulfill that desire. So Srila Prabhupada was also helping to fulfill the desire of Krishna. Krishna desired to do everything that Srila Prabhupada is doing. So it's a reciprocal type of activity. The Lord wants something done, and he needs a certain kind of person to do it. And that kind of person, of course, is glorious Srila Prabhupada, who desired to do it because his guru wanted him to do it. So it works both ways, and both are satisfied, and both are happy in that.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.